Hi, and welcome to the X22 Report Spotlight. Today we have a returning guest, Dave Hayes, also known as Praying Medic. You can find all his work on YouTube, Praying Medic. You can find it on Twitter. I'll be putting all the links at the bottom of the video. You can also order his book, Calm Before the Storm, Q Chronicles. And I am very happy to have Dave back on the X22 Report Spotlight. Dave, welcome back to the Spotlight.
Thank you, sir. Glad to be back on the show. Hey. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Let's just start off with the coronavirus. I wanted to get your take on what you think is happening here. Do you think this is real? Do you think it's a hoax? Or maybe it's a mix of both?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of both. I think the coronavirus obviously is a real pathogen. It's a virus that does exist. Not willing to speculate too much on whether it was engineered or manufactured. I saw this morning a report that U.S. intelligence agencies do not see evidence that it was actually, biologically engineered or manufactured. So I'm not going to go down that rabbit trail. However, every winter in the Northern Hemisphere, anyway, we always have an uptick of viral infections. Cold and flu season comes around every year, right? So it's not unexpected to have an uptick in viral infections. Viruses by nature continually mutate, so there's always different strains of viruses going around. Coronaviruses have been around for probably 50 years that we know of. And it's not unexpected to have these kinds of infections. What to me is interesting is that I think this particular strain was weaponized by the media, by politicians, by corporations in an attempt to get rid of Donald Trump. When I look at all the things that have happened, there are just too darn many coincidences and convenient situations that hurt Trump and help his opponents. So, Joe Biden, who is not the most adept public speaker, suddenly doesn't have to do public debates anymore. Trump was gaining a lot of steam with his rallies, and suddenly Trump isn't doing rallies anymore. The lockdown, what we call lockdown, the social distancing and the stay-at-home orders all started a week after Joe Biden pretty much locked up the Democratic nomination on Super Tuesday. Super Tuesday was March 3rd. And Biden was trailing Bernie Sanders. And then on Super Tuesday, he pulled out some come from behind wins and took the lead in the Democratic nomination for president. Well, it was right after that, March 11th, when all the professional sports teams decided they were not going to be playing the rest of the seasons. And then the shutdown orders came, and social distancing, and no more debates. Joe Biden is only doing very rare public speaking from his basement. So the whole social distancing thing and everything that came from it, when I observe the way that the mainstream media has been reporting on the coronavirus, looks to me like they created a number of successive news cycles intended to create fear and panic in investors, crash the stock market. I think they planned for the shutdown of businesses to hurt the economy and just drive up unemployment numbers. So this whole thing, if you look at it, it creates a massive interconnected web of events that all are disadvantageous for Trump and potentially advantageous for his opponents. And that's kind of how I'm looking at it.
And did you notice that the mainstream media now, since you're talking about how all this was designed to get rid of the rallies, hurt the economy, did you notice how the mainstream media now is putting out poll numbers, how Biden is way in the lead? It reminds me of 2016. That's really what it.
Yeah.
Did you notice that lately?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And Trump's been tweeting about the fake poll numbers. Same thing in 2016. They had all these rigged polls. And the problem with the mainstream media and politicians was they believed those polls. Even though they knew that the polls were fake, they still acted as if the polls were legitimate. And they're doing the same thing this year.
They are. And I wanted to touch upon, since we're talking about the coronavirus and this whole event and Trump doing his pressers, during one of his pressers, he announced, and he had the military standing there, that they were going to launch an enhanced narcotics mission. Do you find that this is odd to launch a major operation during a global pandemic?
No, I don't. Because, you know, although the media wants to focus on the pandemic, and unfortunately, the press have the privilege of focusing the world's attention on whatever subject they choose to focus the world's attention on. So whatever the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, Fox, etc., MSNBC, whatever they choose to make their headline stories, that's pretty much what the world is going to focus on. Other than on social media platforms where people are having side discussions about other subjects, the media are pretty well able to control the narrative. So what the effect of the coronavirus, all right, if you just objectively look at the whole thing, the coronavirus itself is not an anomaly. Even though the World Health Organization and CDC have had some interesting takes on the lethality and the ability of this virus to spread, saying that it has a higher than normal lethality, mortality, morbidity numbers, and all that. I don't think in the end, when this is all done, we're going to see that I think this coronavirus, COVID-19, is going to have the same kind of mortality, morbidity numbers as any other seasonal flu. But the media has chosen to focus on this thing. And Trump has, because he's not doing rallies, he has chosen to do daily pressers. So he's still, he's running his game plan, although he's kind of hemmed in because of the social distancing. I mean, he got involved in this war with a bunch of medical experts and he doesn't have any medical expertise. So he can't very well tell them, hey, you know what, stuff what you think, I don't care. We're going to keep the businesses open. We're going to do all this. He wasn't able to do that unless he wanted to look like an absolute science denier, right? And that's what they would have accused him of, being a science denier, if he decided to go against the advice of Fauci and Birx and other medical experts. So he got he was put into a really bad situation. And I think he's making the best of it. Like you said, he had the generals, all the military leaders. I watched that broadcast. Esper was there.
So did I.
Secretary of Navy was there. Pompeo was there. And I think Barr was there. And they all announced that they're doing this involved Defense Department, Justice Department, narco-terrorism operation. And to me, Trump has to do that because Trump is taking down the deep state, and he is, you know, this morning he's tweeting about James Comey, what a rat, and how he caught James Comey. Well, the deep state apparatus that is trying to take him out, he has to continue putting fire down range on their operations. And the drug cartels in Central and South America are massively important to the deep state. They provide funding, right? So all the drug trafficking, the human trafficking, weapons trafficking that they do, that provides money for CIA black book operations. So Trump is going after their supply lines. All right, now China with this virus has managed to injure America's supply lines. But Trump is going after the deep state supply lines. He's going after their weapons trafficking, drug trafficking, human trafficking, and taking it, the fight, literally, militarily, to the drug cartels in Central and South America. There's a number of battlefields going on with wars being waged on simultaneous battlefields. We're in an information war with the media and politicians, but we're also in a literal military war against drug cartels and deep state assets that have been entrenched for decades. And I'm glad that Trump is going after them.
So you mentioned information war. And like you said, we're in many different wars. I want to just focus on the information war right now, because the information about Flynn is coming out. about how he was set up, about how these FBI agents, they were going to take him down. The mainstream media, they're spinning all this information. Actually, I saw something from Law and Crime saying, this is normally how you do an investigation. Really, I didn't know you created evidence and you use it against someone. I didn't realize that's how you do an investigation. But I mean, when we talk about an information war, what exactly is, what does that mean? I mean, Q uses it saying that this is information warfare. What does information warfare actually mean?
It is the goal, the objective with information is to control the thinking of the population. And the people at the very top of the pyramid, power pyramid, people like George Soros, who control politicians, control media companies, control pharmaceutical companies, control a lot of the world's activities, they learned a long time ago that you can maintain, you can attain power and maintain power, a hold on the world's events, if you can get the majority of the population to believe your narrative, to agree with your thinking and your narratives, and if you'll get them to be compliant and cooperate with your agenda. So a really good example here is the media has been telling us, hammering to average people, you have to stay at home. You have to lock yourself down. You have to not go out. You're not going to restaurants anymore. You can't do this. You can't do that. You're not going to go to work. You're just going to have to, you know, put up with it. And that message is reinforced by Hollywood. Very early on in March, when the first social distancing program, and it's a program because they're programming our minds to accept this, they reinforced the programming with Hollywood stars doing their little videos and putting them on social media and displaying for average people, you know, these millionaire Hollywood people who are putting up with the inconvenience of self-isolation and quarantine. They were establishing a narrative. They're trying to normalize that behavior throughout society and get everyone to think that this is what we just have to do, right? So when we say information warfare, we're just talking about this battle to control the public's behavior and to get, and they see us as sheep. They literally see us as sheep. They believe that we will do what we're told. We will follow their orders. We're not going to push back. We're not going to, you know, be all loud and angry about this. If Hollywood says it's okay and our politicians are saying it's okay and the mainstream media is saying it's okay and this is just our normal, our new normal life, 90% of the people will accept it. And they have. And you have the 10% who are, they're pissed as hell and they don't want to take it and they're done with it. They were done with it after day three. But the information warfare is just simply the fact that the media complex, Hollywood, politicians, academia, healthcare industry, which is really a bunch of technocrats who are helping control the narrative. They're all combining to push this narrative that we have to lock ourselves in our houses, not expect to go out, have to wait for vaccination. Mm. So we're all just going to have to wait for a year or two for a vaccination to be developed. And then we're going to be able to go back to some kind of life that's not really what we had before, right? They've created this narrative and they're trying to get the public to accept this narrative as the inevitable outcome. And we have no way to change that. And I think if we get a critical mass of people who are sick and fed up with this narrative, and you know, if people just look back at the last 2 or 3 or 4 years, every time there's a viral outbreak, we didn't do social distancing. We didn't shut down restaurants. We didn't shut down our businesses. There was no need to. There was no perceived need at that time to shut down the economy. Why is there a need to shut down the economy this time? What, you know, if you just think logically, how do you logically justify shutting down the economy and ruining people's lives over a virus that is no more lethal than any other virus we've ever had, right? So people need to start thinking critically. I think if we get a critical mass of people to push back against this, we can change the narrative, right? It's warfare. They're pushing against us, and we have to push back against them.
Yeah, I agree with you. I see the protests where people are now saying, you know something, I don't want to stay inside. They're having those, they're bringing their cars out. They're honking their horns in front of the governor's municipal building. We see people going to the beach when they're told not to go to the beach. I'm starting to see a lot more of this where people are starting to go out and they're saying, you know what, I'm not going to do this. Actually, we're heading towards that period of time where you're going to see a lot more people start to do this. I wanted to touch upon Flynn right now, and I mentioned this just before, where we're getting information, and you know, Flynn, as we all know, that listen to and follow Q and listen to you and other people, it seems that everything that the mainstream media has been telling us about Flynn is turning out to be fake, where, oh, he lied, he was doing something, and now we're starting to get the real information, actually declassified documentation, showing that Flynn is actually innocent. Do you think this whole Flynn case right now is the beginning of what's to come?
Yep. It's the tip of the spear. And that's what Q has been telling us now for the last 3 months. People have been waiting. Obviously, if you know that there's corruption in the intelligence agencies, and if you know that there was a lot of corruption in the Obama White House, this is going to be the crack in the dam that is going to start letting the floodwaters come. So we're talking about information warfare. In the domain of the human mind, you have to get people aware. You have to make them aware of the reality of corruption. And the reason why corruption exists is because we have certain people have created a system that propagates corruption. And they've built into the system, just an example, in the Justice Department, they have what was called the Justice Department's settlement funds. It's a slush fund that taxpayer money goes into, and the Justice Department can pay settlements out of that fund, and they're not approved by Congress, and they're not necessarily approved by the president. That fund has been used as a slush fund to fund illegal, illicit black book operations, and to take money out of it and to enrich people like George Soros, who can continue running political ad campaigns, continue funding David Brock, you know, all of his leftist organizations, or their propaganda campaigns. All that is being funded by taxpayer money. Now, it was Jeff Sessions shut down the Justice Department settlement funds. He got rid of it because it was a slush fund. It was for corrupt purposes. But that's an example of how they created a system that allows their corruption to be perpetuated. So what we need to do is we need to learn about corruption. The general population needs to learn about the reality, the depth, and the severity of corruption. It exists because we allow it to exist. We don't have the information that we need right now as a general population, not individuals. So the general population doesn't have the information they need to properly assess the severity of corruption. The declassification of these documents related to General Flynn's case, that's a tip of the spear. More documents are going to be declassified. Sidney Powell said this morning, there's more documents coming from the DOJ. There's going to be more documents declassified. It's going to be even worse than the things that they've already brought out. It's going to show more deception, more corruption, more malevolent ideologies behind what they were doing with General Flynn. We know that General Flynn did nothing wrong. The FBI, Pienka and Strzok, who interviewed Flynn, said they didn't believe that he lied. It's in their 302. And now we're finding out that Strzok's boss, Bill Priestap, who is head of counterintelligence at the FBI, looks like he wrote some handwritten notes questioning the motives and the behaviors of this interview with Flynn. And he was concerned that they were trying to set him up. that they were either going to try to trap him into a lie or try to prosecute him, right? So this is looking more and more like a setup. We kind of knew that. Now the public is going to know it. So declassification is going to, as along with prosecution, there has to be declassification. The public isn't terribly invested in the arrest and indictment of some people in the FBI or Department of Justice who falsified information to the FISA court or who illegally spied on General Flynn. And so those people, the public doesn't have a massive interest in seeing that case go one way or the other, I don't think. Now, if they indict Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, the public has a large interest in that story. And those arrests would lead to a lot of civil unrest, rioting, and all kinds of problems. So I don't think we're going to see those things first. I could be wrong. Maybe we will see Obama indicted right away. I don't think so. I think that the people who spied on Flynn, who falsified the FISA documentation to get the surveillance on him, who manipulated his 302, I think those people are going to be indicted first. Then the DOJ is going to have to produce documents, evidence that shows how guilty these people were, so that the public has an understanding of what happened with General Flynn. And then it just goes from there. Hopefully we'll see General Flynn's FISA applications declassified. I would love to see the FISA applications on Flynn. We're going to find out at some point that Ted Cruz was also spied on by Obama. That's what Q has told us. And when that comes out, then it's just going to be a floodgate. We're going to find out more and more about the spying that was done by Obama and his intelligence communities. And the DOJ is going to have to provide declassified documents to prove to the public how corrupt the Obama administration was. So, right, so we have prosecution and we have declassification, which helps provide the information that people need to understand corruption.
Now, I just want to make this clear with everyone, because I know everyone's like, oh, we need to see arrests. We need to see people go to jail. And a lot of people, they get very upset because they want it now.
Right.
What I believe is happening, and from what you're saying, is that this is a buildup of building this up to a point where people accept that they were doing things like spying on Cruz, spying on President Trump, and there were certain individuals within the FBI, the CIA, that were doing this, and it was treasonous. It was, you know, there's sedition, there's, you know, you name it. It was there. And this is a buildup to get to the point where Trump, or I should say the Department of Justice or Durham, can go ahead and arrest Hillary Clinton and Obama. Is that what they're trying to do here?
I think so. I think that, you know, FISA is the foundation, right? This is what Q says. FISA is the foundation. When you build a house, first you put down the foundation. So the foundation of the prosecution of these corrupt people is FISA. You have to demonstrate to the public that the FISA system was abused to spy on all these political campaigns and to spy on individual people like Carter Page and Papadopoulos and Manafort and Flynn. You have to make the case to the public that there is corruption that needs to be dealt with. And although a lot of us are, we want the big targets. We want Clapper, Brennan, Comey, you know, we want Obama and Hillary to be arrested. The DOJ has a process, and the process is to lay the foundation, which is FISA. Lay that down. FISA abuse is going to be exposed. And then they're going to build on that. They'll go into other crimes. And there's the crimes are numerous. You know, there's everything from the unmasking of the names of the people that they were surveilling and putting that in the presidential daily brief. The presidential daily brief goes out to a lot of Obama staffers, and then it gets leaked to the media. The media is going to have a very difficult time in the future, because one of the first things they're going to see come up is leaks to the media regarding the transcript of Flynn's phone call to Ambassador Kislyak. There's actually transcripts, plural. There was several phone calls. Of course, that information was leaked. We believe Sidney Powell said that was leaked by James Baker, Department of Defense Office of Net Assessment. He linked it to probably to David Ignatius of the Washington Post. They wrote the first story on Flynn's calls to Ambassador Kislyak, and that kind of started the whole, it got a media cycle going where there was suspicion about Trump being colluding with Russia, and General Flynn was talking to the Russian ambassador. And this is right at the time when Obama had increased sanctions on Russia, and the narrative that the media put out was that Flynn was going to negotiate with the Russian government and get the sanctions removed, right? That was a suspicion that the media created in the minds of the public. So that the whole Russian collusion narrative was blown up by the Mueller investigation. This is going to, I think, further deconstruct that narrative by the mainstream media of, you know, Russian collusion. And then they're just going to keep building more and more. I think eventually, when you listen to people like John Brennan and James Clapper talk about how this whole thing was put together, Clapper said, well, we did the intelligence community assessment because Obama told us to. They're all fingering Obama. It's all going to, like, they all have culpability, but they're all ultimately going to point the finger of blame at Obama. And Obama is going to go down. He'll be arrested. He'll be charged. He was the one who gave the orders. They all knowingly participated in this. They all knowingly weaponized the intelligence agencies. They attempted to overthrow an election. They attempted to remove a president, a duly elected president, from office, right? So if you look at treason, sedition, and subversive activities, all of that kind of involves activities that are taken against a legitimate government. And the media, for one example, under the 18 U.S. Code, Chapter 115, Treason, Sedition, and Subversive Activities, one of the crimes in there is using the press to advocate for the overthrow of the government. And I think a lot of these people in the media are going to end up being charged with felonies for knowingly publishing false information with the intent of overthrowing the government. It's going to get serious pretty quickly.
I agree with you. And the one question I have, and I know the mainstream media, they've been working with these intelligence operatives. But as we know, the mainstream media, they don't like to report on things, or they pretend, you know, it doesn't exist. If you actually look at like CNN or MSNBC, you can see that you would think that the Flynn story would be, you know, right there front and center of what's going on. But there, it's not to be found. As this continues on, and more information comes out, and we started this with information warfare, the mainstream media is not going to report on this. So yes, I know, you know, other people that listen to us or follow Twitter, follow Q, we've known for a very long time, but I'm talking about the people that follow mainstream media. How and when will they actually find out? Because a lot of these individuals, they don't follow Trump's tweets. They don't hear this type of information. Actually, I was just speaking to someone the other day, and I said, oh yeah, arrests are coming. Flint, they're like, what are you talking about? I have no idea. Who's arresting? What? So I'm just curious of how we're going to cross this like boundary where the sheep start to figure out like something went on here.
Well, that's a really good question. And there are a couple of things to think about. First of all, the majority of people in this country don't actually get their information primarily from mainstream media. They get it from social media. The reason why, like CNN is, when they do a news broadcast, they're lucky to get 100,000 views, all right? You and I get 100,000 views every time we put out a YouTube video. We have about as much reach as CNN does, right? So the mainstream media is not going to want to report on this, but I think they're going to be forced to report on it at some point. They're going to come to a fork in the road. So either they're going to report on what's happening, and they're going to have to switch their philosophy and get on the right side of history, or they're going to continue propagating lies, what I would say conspiracy theories, and falsehoods, and they're going to continue to deny the truth. Now, I expect, like New York Times, Washington Post, good examples, they will put out a story that has a nugget of truth in it, but they'll surround that little nugget of truth with 18 paragraphs of propaganda. when New York Times last Friday published the article acknowledging that U.S. Attorney Durham is investigating leaks of Flynn's phone call to the media. There was like two sentences where they acknowledge that Durham is investigating leaks to the media regarding Flynn's phone call. Then the rest of that whole article was a bunch of propaganda about how Trump is evil, orange dictator, bad guy. Flynn is, not a victim, right? So when these mainstream outlets have to report something, they will report it. They're just going to spin it. They're going to cover it over with a lot of propaganda and leftist ideology. But eventually, they're going to have to face the fact when Comey is indicted, Brennan is indicted, Clapper is indicted, and all these other people in the FBI and DOJ and CIA, when they're indicted and they're going to court and they're going to be on trial, it's going to be the trials are going to be public. I don't think the media is going to have the opportunity to not report on that. They're going to have to report it as an 800-pound gorilla in the room. At some point, they're going to have to talk about it, and they may try to spin it, and I'm sure they will. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out between now and November. I don't know if we're going to see indictments between now and November, but if we do, you start seeing former intelligence community employees indicted and put on trial during the run-up to an election. Then you have this whole question with Joe Biden. Good example. So the media doesn't really want to report on these allegations of sexual assault against Joe Biden, but they're having to report on it. And their headlines are weird. Like, they're convoluting and twisting the words in their headline because you can tell they don't really want to report on this. But people are going to realize if they don't say anything about this, that they're negligent in reporting. They're going to have to say something about it. So it's going to be interesting to see how the media reports on the Joe Biden issue, how they report on the pending indictments of these, Spygate conspirators. They're not going to want to do that. And Q has warned there's going to be a massive push to silence pro-Trump accounts on social media. Why? Because a lot of us have more influence on the culture than CNN or MSNBC do. So they're going to have to shut us down in order to let those voices be heard. I'm anticipating it. I'm waiting, for my Twitter account to be banned or my YouTube account to be shut down. The pressure is they're going to deploy all assets in this war between now and November. We're going to see increasing censorship, increasing throttling, accounts being banned. People that you're used to seeing on YouTube, Twitter are going to be gone. They're not going to be there. You're going to have to go to their private websites to find their information. My hand is up. So, we have some interesting days in front of us.
I think we're already starting to see the social media companies do this. I mean, on Twitter, a lot of the tweets that someone will retweet, you can't see them. DMs aren't working. Actually, some accounts have been taken down. A lot of people on YouTube have been demonetized to try to force them out already. I believe that's step one where they demonetize, they try to push you out without making any type of income. And if that fails, I think they move ahead and they just remove your account for whatever reason.
Susan Wojcicki, the CEO of YouTube, said the other day that if you put out a video that contradicts the official position of World Health Organization on coronavirus, they're going to take your video down. And if you do it enough times, they'll suspend your channel. This is all about narrative control right now. And they're going to get rid of accounts that are causing problems for the narrative.
Now, Q mentions the Trump card where, eventually Trump might play the Trump. I don't know what the Trump card is. I don't know exactly what that will be. But again, he's holding all the information. He knows everything that's going on. Do you think he will play this before the elections, or do you think he'll ever play it?
I don't know. I'm not sure what the Trump card is. I couldn't give an informed opinion on that. I think regarding social media, Q has said that at some point things are going to change, and Q has kind of explained it in this way. Sometimes you have to allow bad actors a little bit of You know, they say, give them enough rope, they'll hang themselves. You have to allow bad actors to publicly display what is in their heart, what their real agenda is, right? So Trump allowing all these governors the freedom to make up their own rules when it comes to social distancing and shutting down or opening businesses. A lot of states, I think there were 7 states that did not enforce any kind of mandatory shutdown. But most states did. Some states became very oppressive. Some cities, you know, Mayor de Blasio became very oppressive. I think Gavin Newsom is being very oppressive in his implementation of the shutdown. But Trump is allowing these little dictators to put themselves in the spotlight. What's her name up in Michigan? I forget her name. Trump calls her Halfwit. Yeah. She has exposed herself as a little dictator. And the same thing's happening with social media. As Facebook and Twitter and YouTube become more and more oppressive and silencing us, shutting down our accounts, removing our content, they're all going to reach a point where their corruption and their self-serving interests are going to be exposed. And then Trump can step in and say, okay, you know what? You've gone too far. That's what Barr is doing. So Trump is kind of doing an interesting thing with the shutdown. He's allowing the governors and mayors the authority and the freedom to do whatever they want. But he's also got Barr over here, his attorney general. And Barr is saying, you go too far, you start stepping on people's constitutional rights, and you're going to be hearing from me. So Trump is, in a sense, acquiescing to the medical experts who are saying, oh, you need to, you know, do these shutdowns. On the other hand, he's got his 100-pound Rottweiler right here going, you know, you go too far and I'm going to sick my dog on you and you're going to have problems. So Barr is being used as the balance, the lever to make sure that they don't go too far. And I think what Q has said with respect to social media is at some point, social media platforms are going to become regulated like utilities. That's the long-term plan. You have to demonstrate a reason why you would want to regulate them like utilities. And the reason is going to be widespread, rampant abuse of censoring and deplatforming people. And that has to be allowed to happen so that Justice Department, Commerce Department can step in and say, okay, now this is too far. We're going to start regulating you. You're going to be open to investigation. You're going to, all of your practices are going to be examined. And if you, they'll be regulated like utilities, and they will not be allowed to continue doing this censorship. Either that or they'll collapse. I think that's the long-term prognosis for social media.
Now, since we're talking about social media and we're seeing that, you know, channels and Twitter accounts being taken down. Q does mention about something about the emergency broadcast system, mentions something about the White House having their own video platform. Do you think that is going to come into play? I mean, do you think, I know we talked about the mainstream media and the charges that are coming and eventually they'll have to get on board, but do you think they will try to block everything? I mean, they were trying to block Trump from his pressers where they only show parts and bits and pieces of it. Do you think we'll get to that point where Trump, his administration, will have to use the emergency broadcast system,
It's possible. It's hard to predict where this is going to go. Obviously, if you're a thinking, objective person, you can kind of see that social media definitely has a political bias, a political agenda, and there are certain types of conversations they're okay with and certain types of conversations they're not okay with, right? And they've got that bias. And how far are they going to go to push their political agenda? Will they go far enough to, you know, on the eve of the election, if things are going badly enough, will they just shut down the platform? Will they take Twitter offline for 2 or 3 days? I don't know. If they do, then what happens? What happens if Facebook and Twitter go offline? What happens then? Q has hinted at the possibility of social media platforms being shut down because they're that determined to control the narrative. And if a pro-Trump narrative is gaining speed and gaining momentum on social media, that's when you start getting the false flags. Now, this General Flynn revelation is coming to light. If this builds enough steam and enough momentum on social media, you can expect a false flag where some event is going to happen and the media will be able to then focus the world's attention on the event and not on General Flynn.
Yeah.
Will they go so far as to completely, you know, shut down social media platforms? I think it's possible. I don't have a crystal ball that would predict that that's actually going to happen. If that did happen, I think that's when the emergency broadcast alert would come in. Trump has the ability to communicate directly to people through text messages, the emergency alert system. I hope it doesn't get to that, but it wouldn't surprise me if it did.
And let me just follow this whole thing up with Durham here, because we see the information on Flynn is coming out. Durham is supposed to be wrapping up his investigation in this late spring going into summer. What do you think Durham has been investigating? What do you think he's going to show when all of this starts to come out?
First of all, I don't think there's going to be a Durham report.
Well, that's good.
Durham works on the criminal side of the DOJ, not on the inspector general side. So he's not going to issue a report. He's going to indict people, more than likely. He might issue a report. I don't know. But I expect that, first of all, Durham has been working on this whole Spygate thing for probably the better part of 3 years. Right. So when Jeff Sessions came in as attorney general, one of the very first things he did was he appointed 17 U.S. attorneys to investigate certain things that were going on, primarily focusing on intelligence leaks. So he, very early on, I think March and April of 2017, was when he started this task force of U.S. attorneys who are going to look into intelligence leaks to the media. And he warned people in the intelligence community, if you are leaking, you better stop it because we're investigating you and we're going to take you down. So Durham, I believe, was one of those. He was one of the 17 U.S. attorneys who were put on that team to investigate leaks to the media and other things. Now, Sessions was interesting side note. Sessions appointed Durham as a as an interim U.S. attorney on the same day that Q went operational. So October 28th, 2017, Durham was a U.S. attorney, but he got reappointed under the appointments clause where when a president comes in, a lot of U.S. attorneys end up getting tossed out and new ones come in. Preet Bharara got tossed out. So there's reappointments of some. And Durham was one of the first people who was reappointed as a U.S. attorney. Durham's been working on all of this Spygate corruption, I think, for years. FISA abuse, illegal surveillance. He's looking into how the UK and Italy and Australia were involved, their intelligence agencies were involved in this whole thing. This is a massive conspiracy involving other countries, involving their intelligence agencies, their assets, to try to interfere with an election. And that's primarily what Durham has been focusing on. I think that he's been impaneling grand juries and getting indictments on all of these people, working his way from the bottom to the top. So looking at low-level people in CIA, FBI, and Department of Justice, getting their testimonies, getting their evidence, and then going to people higher up in the chain of command, getting their testimony, getting more evidence, go higher up in the chain of command, keep working your way up to the top. We know that Durham has been talking to John Brennan and Clapper and people of that nature. So I think you're right. I think it's getting toward the end. And I think we're going to start seeing indictments relatively soon. I'm not going to make a prediction on when, but I think Durham is going to end up indicting a lot of people in the Obama administration, in the intelligence communities, State Department, CIA, probably Defense Department. A lot of this was run through Office of Net Assessment in the DOD. So there's going to be some people in the military who will be implicated. And then from that point, after that, and that's all done, and that could take a year or two to bring all that out. Then we get John Huber's investigation. So Huber has been focusing on matters related to Hillary Clinton, the Uranium One scandal, the Clinton Foundation corruption, and all of that. And then that, I think, will come on the back of Durham's, the indictments that Durham is going to unseal.
Dave, thank you very much for being on the X22 Report Spotlight. Once again, how can people see your work and get your book?
All right. I am on a lot of social media platforms. I'm on Gab. I'm on Twitter as @PrayingMedic. I'm on Facebook. I have a YouTube channel, and I have my website, prayingmedic.com. And you can get my book, Calm Before the Storm. It is a really good introduction to Q. If you don't know anything about Q, don't know anything about the deep state, you can check out that book. It gives a pretty broad explanation of Q's operation from the beginning. A lot of the major themes that Q's covers. There is a glossary in the back of the book that has over 500 terms, abbreviations, initials, symbols, and different things that Q uses that are explained in the back of the book. You can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Great. I'll be putting all the links at the bottom of the video. And I just want to say something about your book. I refer to it all the time. When I don't know something, I go to your book, I look it up, and boom, you have it right there. And I have to say, your book is amazing.
Cool. Dave, and volume two is coming. I'm working on volume two.
Fantastic.
And that'll be out hopefully in about a month or so.
Great. Dave, once again, thank you very much for being on the Spotlight. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.